I think that the first time that I felt pulled out of it, I mean, we'll have to jump right into it here because it's no other way to talk about it. But I think maybe like there's a certain like two-dimensional quality about the villains of his world. So like the Thomas Wayne and the Murray character, the De Niro character, you know, there's like a surface two-dimensionality about the antagonists and the world that he's in, that I think at first took me out of it. Later, you end up doing all these, you know, after the end of the film, you end up kind of trying to square a lot of those things by, you know, with like an unreliable narrator kind of.
Yeah. Right. I hadn't even noticed or thought about what you're saying there. Because as in terms of those supporting characters, I suppose it was particularly obvious with the cops, in that they had two very known actors, particularly one of them is particularly well known, but they're both pretty well known actors, and they really just had cameo roles in that film, and they really had no function except to be the presence of the law encroaching on his fantasy. And so casting, you know, well-known actors, character actors, as those cops seemed to be a way to make them more substantial than they were. They actually had, there was no part for those actors to take, right? They must have only taken them because it was such a high profile movie. So, yeah, go ahead.
That thread is also exists in the kind of alt comedy world. Thinking of like Eric Andre, who I don't know. I think he's sort of like a self-styled Gigi Allen of comedy.
And what's he do?
Oh, it's, you know, I mean, I think like even the Marx Brothers are kind of anarchy, that kind of anarchic, you know, like even think about like those, the Marx Brothers characters would be like hanging out with rich people, but sort of like, you know, cutting up their wardrobe or something, you know?
Getting it all wrong.
Yeah.
So that's like social gaffes. It's like the low end of the taboo spectrum, taboo breaking. Like right. Rupert Pupkin maps that very much, as in, to begin with, maybe the Joker does too, to begin with, he just does all the wrong things socially. Like he's trying to ascend the social ladder and he's just getting it all wrong. And he's compensating by creating this fancy life in which he gets it right.
Right.
Even though he's the same in his fancy life, but the people, particularly Jerry Lewis, Jerry Langford, respond to him differently. Like even though he's still the same gauche, unfunny character in his fantasies, you don't experience it because the response to him is positive. It's only when the jokes or whatever aren't working that we start to cringe, right? We might cringe anyway if it's all fake, but it's not nearly as bad as when you know, nobody's getting it. There's no bubble to protect, you know, the social misfit from his own ineptitude and gaucheness. That's a painful thing.
Yeah.
And King of Comedy really plays on that. Like it's the comedy of discomfort.
Yeah.
But in any event, that it leads, like the Joker movie, it leads incrementally or gradually, or quite rapidly really, from the unintentional taboo breaking of social gaffes, jokes that aren't funny and so on, and trying to get an appointment with Jerry Langford, and he doesn't want to see you, and just all that discomfort of trying to get access into high society or into society at all, in the case of the Joker, that eventually leads to him consciously and deliberately breaking the taboo of kidnapping Langford, right? Becoming a criminal. And then only by becoming a criminal does he gain access to high society.
But that ending, the
Might be
ending of,
fantasy, yeah.
yeah, I mean, the ending of Taxi Driver and King of Comedy, especially King of Comedy, I think never, I it's, again, like with the Joker, you had to reconcile it, you had to square it later because, you never see Rupert Pupkin's. You don't see much of his act until the final 5 minutes, and then you see almost all of his act on TV. And he does well.
Yeah.
The crowd likes him and it seems so improbable. And then of course, yeah, he's gonna go to jail. But his plan worked and it led to a career,
Yeah.
after it. And then I guess Travis Bickle, I mean, he didn't really have a plan, but it worked out accidentally for him that he became a hero and
It didn't. It didn't. I mean, Taxi Driver is much more realistic than King of Comedy, isn't it? And it's less fantasy. He's not lost in a fantasy in such an overt way. But with Travis, part of the realism, I suppose, is that, I mean, he's more conscious than Pupkin as well. He's consciously wrestling with his own existential, alienation and despair. And although he does explode, and experience some sort of relief. He's unable to kill himself, number one. That's his objective, as it was the Joker's. But number two, the opposite effect is incurred. Like he wanted to kamikaze self-destruct, really. But instead, he becomes lifted up socially. His act of madness is misunderstood. In a way, it wouldn't have been if he'd managed to kill a candidate. Clearly, he wanted somehow to be fully ostracized, even to be killed. Like, you try and kill a political candidate, you're going to get shot. So that was true. It was half-conscious suicide attempt. So the fact that he was horrified by the end, there's no indication that was a fantasy because that wasn't what he wanted. We see that he's still unhappy at the end, really.
I mean, you'd say that not part of his intention, not part of his plan, and yet wasn't his intention all along was to have Betsy like him, and which she does end up at the end. And you can, that's the part I can never suspend my disbelief. A, I can't feel like you can't three kill three people and get away with it legally, like even if they are the right class of people. And then to have Betsy get in the back of your car and like suddenly have a total change of heart, like, that seems unlikely.
It does. It's true. Yeah. And he doesn't want to. I mean, he gets to reject her. That is his fantasy, I guess, is to reject her having been rejected by her. Yeah. So the movie does very well there because it's kind of the opposite of King and Comedy, I think, because it creates a sort of spell that by the end, and you're kind of so dazed by the violence that it's very dreamlike, those last couple of scenes. And although one can logically question them, I didn't really, because they just felt like we needed some kind of come down at the end anyway. And the main thing I got from that was that he wasn't healed, he wasn't resolved, whatever happened. Even if he'd fulfilled his fantasy and become a hero in other people's eyes, he was still this alienated potential psychopath waiting to explode. So somehow the ending felt right.
Bickle?
Yeah, Bickle.
Who thinks of him that way? Just
As which way?
as an alienated guy waiting to explode? Just the audience or?
Yeah, for us, that's what's communicated, because that's what Scorsese and Schrader and De Niro all thought that was what they intended to show at the end.
Because after he explodes, you can still see that he has these little PTSD triggers that are still there.
Yeah, it's that last shot of his
Yeah. Yeah.
reacting, right?
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Plus you can see he's just not—he's not different.
Right.
It's not like he's had some big catharsis and now he's,
Sure.
you know,
Sure.
Mr. Jolly. So, but with Pupkin, it's a very obvious place to go that ending could be a fantasy, except. Unlike the taxi driver ending, it seems totally plausible. As long as he did do a good act at the end. If he managed to pull off the stand-up routine,
If they laughed, he
if
was
they
in.
laughed, then he was in.
Yeah.
Didn't matter that he kidnapped to get on the show.
Right.
I mean, yeah, maybe he'd be away for 10 years or whatever, who knows? Kidnapping's pretty serious. But that he could write a bestseller guaranteed. Yeah.
Right.
Like that none of that's exaggerated.
Right.
And that if he managed, well, yeah, depending on how long away he was, he could probably come back and still, yeah, people would still be interested because it's just such an unlikely story.
Right.
So,
Yeah.
but I mean, that to me, it's a fascinating possibility that film presents, which is, like I
Right.
say, that if you want to access the higher levels of society, you have to become a criminal.
Yeah, and that you can break into the system and make the system work for you. I mean, I think the most improbable thing about it is that they do actually laugh, because you never see him like working out his material. I was fascinated by it. Like with Arthur Fleck, you got the sense that actually he was a very good clown. The
Yeah.
very few scenes that you see of him clowning, you see, oh, he's a good clown. But then when it comes to stand-up comedy, you can tell he just doesn't get it. He doesn't understand how it works. You know, he's trying to. He's there at a
Way.
club laughing at inappropriate times.
Right. I was going to say, why did they skip that with the girlfriend? But of course, she wasn't really there. So they had to, presumably, she wasn't really there. So they had to fudge that. As in, surely he'd made a complete ass of himself on stage, but they didn't really
Ruining their first date.
ruining their first date and making it so uncomfortable,
Right.
right? But they didn't inflict the discomfort on us.
Right.
And
That's
I think that was one way that the film kept holding back. It really wasn't that uncomfortable. Like even the final scene, you said, yeah, they did convey that. They at least denied us the satisfaction of him being like, what's his
ta-da.
name? Mickey in Natural Born Killers, you know, super
Right.
eloquent psychopath kind of
Sure.
mode. But they didn't make us squirm and sweat in agony the way that King of Comedy did. Yeah. I think because they wanted to have it both ways. They did want people who had just come to see the origin of the Joker. Not to feel shortchanged, but they also wanted to get the good reviews of a this is a thoughtful, serious adult drama. But yeah, I was definitely hoping for more with the ending, like really communicating that, like when he rehearses it ahead of time, even coming out. And like the scene leading up, he's doing his moves in ready time, and his moves are, until he's actually on camera, his moves are just very weird and creepy, right? So then there's those crew members watching him, thinking, "Who the fuck is this guy?"
Right.
And that I thought that was a good scene, but then I was hoping that they would show him come out and try to do the moves as they've copied them on TV and get it all wrong. So then he's trying to be smooth and funny, and he comes off creepy. That would have been very interesting if they'd done that. You know, showing in microcosm how you can almost get it right, but it just doesn't matter. It's just completely wrong. Even if it's a little bit wrong, it's completely wrong. You know, on TV particularly. because I mean, that's who he is, isn't it? This is the Phil Snyder thesis. He's the psychopath who wants to be the hero and who ends up the clown. It's exactly the great American psychopath thesis or model. Like his pathology is inseparable from his desire to be a somebody, to be a hero. And so all he can turn himself into is a clown because he gets everything wrong. Except he actually is a clown. And as you say, he's quite a good clown, but he wants to be more than a clown. So he brings a gun to the children's show. So he gets fired as a clown.
I mean, but it's very different than Rupert Pupkin. Rupert Pupkin, you feel that he has put in all this time and energy into researching the history of comedy. He has all this reverence for all these comedians, and he, you get the sense that he has some kind of connection to the craft, I guess, And with Arthur Fleck, you never get a sense of why, why is it that he says, "Oh, I thought my life was a tragedy, but now I realized it's a comedy." But it's almost like it's told, but it's never shown, because there's never, with the exception of my favorite scene in the whole film, you could probably guess what it was.
No, just tell me otherwise.
It's the one where he kills the guy in the apartment, and then he's sitting there in the hallway, and it's with the dwarf, and it's very effective because he has just the white paint, base paint on, which is probably the creepiest makeup, And the dwarf has to, of course, walk by him to get out. And just a split second before it happens, I'm thinking like, oh, he's gonna reach out and scare the dwarf. He does. It's the perfect 1-2 punch, And then of course he can't reach the latch on the door. And that was sort of it's sort of the perfect dark comedy scene, right? Like the perfect dark comedy moment. Like I kind of left the theater just thinking like, oh, if there had just been five more of those scenes, then that thesis that, oh, your life's not a tragedy, your life's a comedy,
Right,
would have
gotcha.
been real.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, 'cause I didn't stick on that like you did, but you're right, it wasn't backed up. And I think it was the thesis statement. If we're to see the Joker as kind of Mickey-esque, the pure psychopath who's embraced nihilism and thereby transcended, in quotes, the tragedy of life and turned it into a comedy in which human beings' life itself is irrelevant. It doesn't matter what you do, nothing has any meaning. So then you may as well do all of the things that you're not supposed to do. So, Big Brother, I think, Big Mother, like God, would be kind of neutral and it would watch every grain of sand just as intently as it would watch the next Ted Kaczynski. Right? It just have its eyes on everything constantly for whatever reason. I mean, obviously, when we see the super state, security state has a reason to control and map our behavior, but that doesn't extend to grain of sands. But there's something about the nature of that, just like a virus, the nature of the project, that it just has to keep expanding its influence. I guess because you can't create, like, it can't, human error would be too much of a factor if human beings decide, oh, well, we don't need to observe every grain of sand. And like, who says who? Who are you? Are you sure? Based on what data? How do we know that some point in the future we won't need a website for that grain of sand, or whatever it is, a history of that grain of sand? Anyway, I don't know where I'm going with all this. Come a long way from body tattoos.